Welcome to Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman, where the discussion is about the challenges and opportunities that people face when communicating with the opposite gender. Brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. Now here's your host, Judy Hoberman.
Good afternoon and happy Monday. It is noon central and time for Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on Tough Talk Radio. Now, I want you to think about something. You don't have to share it with anyone, and you don't have to say it out loud. But have you ever been in a situation that you thought everything was going in the right direction, and then for some reason it didn't? Were you at the point that you just might have to admit it was time for you to veer off in another direction? And was the only word that came to your mind was that you actually failed? Well, that's what we're going to be talking about today, learning to fail. In other words, a deliberate way of learning. Now, most people don't like to talk about failure. It seems to cause havoc on our self-esteem. And if that's the case, why should we spend time talking about it at all? Well, the truth of the matter is that in order for you to get ahead and to be successful, there has to be some hiccups along the way. And it's the way you react to those little speed bumps that matter. Now, I don't know about you, but I would say that most people are afraid to admit failure. But growth and learning happens when you fail. Winston Churchill said, "Success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm." Now, in this day of instant gratification, we don't want to take those steps in order to succeed. I've heard on numerous occasions about so-and-so who is an overnight success with their online product or their program and how lucky they are. But if you ask Mr. or Ms. So-and-so, they would tell you that their success came after many years of trying and failing and then perfecting their product. And if you add up all that time, well, it's probably well over 10 years. So instead of trying to find out what makes something successful, try finding out what made them failures first. The funny thing is that it's much easier to find out why something fails than it is to find out why it succeeded. You simply discover what people didn't like about it and what steps you took that didn't work. One easy way to do that is to simply ask in a survey or a poll or phone calls. You know, we tend to think we know what people are looking for by assuming, and we all know what happens when you assume. Now, while we don't really want to spend so much time focusing on failure, by taking a real look about what didn't work, you can quickly discover what to change to do it even better than you did and then do it differently the next time around. Now, the most important thing about failing is what it teaches you. And we all know that doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. So think of it this way. When you avoid those steps you took that resulted in your failure, you'll be less likely to fail again. The bottom line is you have to learn from it. Failure will be the driving force towards your success, and failure is only a word that means you've produced a different result than what you originally had planned. You haven't failed. You have produced some other result. Well, when this happens, and it happens to all of us, there are two questions to ask yourself. What have I learned, and what have I done? Instead of fearing failure, we should learn that failures, mistakes, errors are the way we learn and the way we grow. And I'm going to share with you some of the world's greatest success stories of those that actually failed their way to success. So let's start with Albert Einstein. Now, most of us think Einstein, and then we immediately think of the word genius. But that really wasn't how his life began. He didn't speak until he was 4, and he didn't read until he was 7. So his teachers and his parents thought that he was mentally handicapped. Eventually, he was expelled from school. He was refused admittance to the Zurich Polytechnical School. He attended a trade school for a year and was finally admitted to the university. He was the only one in his graduating class unable to get a teaching position because no professor would recommend him. One professor labeled him as the laziest dog they had ever had in the university, and the only job he was able to get was an entry-level position in a government patent office. Well, let's go to Abraham Lincoln. Now, today he's remembered as one of the greatest leaders of our nation, but his life wasn't easy either. When he was younger, he went to war as a captain and returned as a private, and that's taking a step not only backwards but to the lowest rank. And he didn't stop failing there. He started numerous businesses, he went bankrupt twice, and he was defeated in 26 campaigns he made for public office. Or let's look at J.K. Rowling. She's been seen as a true success story with her Harry Potter series. But she was nearly penniless, she was depressed, she was divorced, she was trying to raise a child on her own while she was attending school. And she went from depending on welfare to survive to being one of the richest women in the world in a span of only 5 years. And we can go on and on and on with all these stories, But the one that people remember is Michael Jordan. And most people wouldn't believe that this man, who's known as the best basketball player of all time, was actually cut from his high school basketball team. But he didn't let this setback stop him. He actually said, I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. And on 26 occasions, I've been entrusted to take the game-winning shot, and I missed. I have failed over and over and over again in my life, and that's why I succeed. So those are just a few examples, and the list of failures is pretty long. But again, it's what you do with what you've learned that makes you stand out and become the success you're trying to achieve. Now, most of us prefer to avoid being in a position of failing, but as I said, some failures will support success. So here's a few ideas for you. Number one, failures can pave a way to career success. Did you know that many companies actually look for CEOs that have failed before? When they've failed, they have the ability to see what went wrong and how they can change the outcome. And if they can't admit that they are human, that's not going to work. But most of them can admit, and they've messed up, and so their credibility jumps up. Second, the willingness to make mistakes will help achieve excellence. Some people refer to this as their growth mindset, and they believe their talents and abilities can be developed over time. Now, this does take dedication and mentoring, and those that have this, they seek out challenges so that they continue learning and making things happen. Third, if you want to be creative, you need to be ready to fail. Now, you can avoid all risks if you want, but then you also stall all your creativity. Now, creativity requires risk, and risk often leads to failure. So what counts is not the failure, but what you do after that. And finally, you have to be able to admit your mistakes or failures. Being able to admit when one is wrong is a sign of strength because that's so difficult to do. And we all know how hard that is and often has the effect of making us trust them even more. So remember, fail doesn't have to be a negative. What it really means is first attempt in learning. Fail first, fail often, fail fast, but don't be afraid to fail. Sometimes you have to learn to fail forward. When we come back, you'll hear from my first expert that has some stories of her own about failing forward. This is Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on Tough Talk Radio, and we will be right back.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location? Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio medium, where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Are you looking to simplify your life and automate your business, but don't want to mess with learning multiple systems to do so? Good. You don't have to. Infusionsoft combines everything your business needs. Let the team at Growth Coaching Systems set up your email, CRM, and e-commerce into a single online system today. It's the easiest way to grow sales and save time. One monthly payment, one software to learn, and have it all on one dashboard. Infusionsoft. Get it now and market and sell like the pros. For more information or to sign up for Infusionsoft, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com/Infusionsoft.
Are you an entrepreneur? Are you where you want to be? Do you believe that if you build it, they will come? Unfortunately, entrepreneurship doesn't work that way, and that's why you need to read Famous Isn't Enough. In this book, you'll find real-life situations and lessons learned. When all is said and done, there's nothing better than being your own boss. Remember, nothing just happens. You have to put in the work. Famous Isn't Enough is your roadmap. Get your copy today at www.famousisn'tenough.com.
Welcome back to Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on Tough Talk Radio. Now remember, you can join our discussion by calling in to 347-989-1363, and we will get you right onto the show. So let's bring in my first guest, Andrea Waltz. Andrea received a Bachelor of Science degree in Criminal Justice from Long Beach State. At the age of 8, she called George Lucas to see if she could work with him on future movies. She was the youngest general manager in eyeglass retailer LensCrafters history and launched her own training company at the age of 24. She's a speaker member of the Direct Selling Women's Alliance. She loves social media and currently has 18,000 plus followers on Twitter. She was featured on Idol Chat, a TV Guide channel show where she was interviewed on how even idol rejects can be successful failures. There's a whole lot more, but let's bring her up and let's get started. So welcome to the show, Andrea. I am super excited to have you on today.
Hey, Judy. Thanks for having me.
Oh, that's great. You know, with both our backgrounds being open to rejection and failure, I know there's a lot to share with our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much that goes into having a mindset, whether you're selling or trying to reach any kind of personal goal or dream. You've got to have the right mindset related to failure. And in fact, a lot of times we tell people that we kind of joke and say we like to give people permission to fail, because I think kind of the flip side of it is people can understand it intellectually, but sometimes it's the desire to be perfect and the desire to, you know, kind of have everything go our way, that we don't allow ourselves to go there.
You know, it's so funny that you said there, because I remember when I was taking my exam for insurance, and I never failed anything, and I failed the exam by 1 point, and I came home and I told my kids, and they went, "Oh my God, thank God, because now we know you're human." So I think it's interesting that you say that, because people are not set up for the concept of failing. And how important is it for them to understand that you need to fail?
Right. Well, completely. And the interesting thing is that we as children, and we all know this, those of us who are parents know that you celebrate your kids' failures and you expect them to make all kinds of mistakes. It's the only way that they're going to learn anything. And we all failed as kids learning to ride a bike or tie our shoes or do any of the things. And yet somehow in business and in life as adults, it's like we don't want to fail at any cost. And certainly what we're not talking about here is making silly, stupid, expensive mistakes for no reason. It is,
right.
But it's all about taking those calculated risks, those, hey, we look around and we say, okay, this may or may not work, I don't know, but you can't take that next step unless you're willing to put yourself out there.
So do you think that someone can actually succeed in their business if they've never failed?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I think there are people that that get lucky, that have everything go their way. But I think that failure, in fact, there's a quote, and I'm not going to say it perfectly, so I won't. I'll just paraphrase that. You know, failure is a great teacher, because you learn so much from failures, and so certainly someone can be successful. But I think when I see that everything I'm doing is reaching some level of success, that everything I'm doing is kind of working or working well somewhere in there, what I realize is that I'm not taking big enough chances, I'm not taking big enough risks, I'm playing it safe and coming up with, I guess, what you'd call smaller ideas rather than the big idea. And so so you really learn that in order to have kind of that big success, you've got to be willing to fail big. In fact, one of Rich and I like to say, easy yeses produce little successes. So if you're kind of going after, you know, from a selling standpoint, the low-hanging fruit, the easy yeses, you're not willing to fail big, you're not going after that big client or customer, and so you're experiencing, like you said, nothing but success, you've got to look and say, okay, maybe I'm playing small.
Mm-hmm. Totally. So let me ask you a question. Do you think that rejection and failure is the same thing, or is it slightly different? And how does that fit into somebody's, you know, behavior?
You know, I think that's a great question. I don't think anyone has ever really posed a question quite like that. And I think they are a little different. And I think there's a few things to consider relating to failure. And certainly what we make the case about in our book, Go for No, is that failure and getting a no are kind of the same thing. So we kind of pull failure and rejection together kind of as a package to make it easier. And so, you know, it's like people fear failure. They don't want other people to think that they don't know what they're doing or that they're, you know, a loser or whatever. So they play it safe and they don't do anything that could look like a failure or look like a rejection. But I think that actually, I think that there are some things that people are willing to fail over and make mistakes over. And sometimes the rejection really almost as a separate thing and has a lot to do with hearing a no from someone else. So in other words, somebody might say, oh, I have no problem, trying a new marketing thing where I put a banner out somewhere on an internet site, or I try a blog, or, I do some kind of promotion, at some networking event. I try those things. And if those things don't work, if those things are failures, that's one thing. And maybe it's not as public, and maybe it's not as, they don't take it as personally. But rejection is really where someone has to deal with that personal side, where they have somebody saying no to them, and then they really take it personally. And I think that can cause, for some people, even a greater level of anxiety.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think rejection is definitely more personal. I hate when somebody rejects me, but if they, if I don't make a sale or something, okay, it's not necessarily me. But yeah, so let me ask you a question. Do you think that the fear of rejection could hold somebody back from the potential that they have?
Absolutely. I think fear of rejection holds, in some way, most of us. And over the years, just talking to people and talking to people after we speak, or having people write in on Facebook or whatever, what I've seen and heard is that it is like the number one thing that holds people back. And we have people who say to us all the time, I don't want to be rejected. I don't want people to tell me no. I, have all these negative feelings around it. And so I think that is probably the single biggest thing, that if people could learn to embrace it and learn to actually respect that rejection and receive it in a different way, that they can move past it so much faster and so much easier. But what we do is we tend to let that fester, and we tend mm-hmm. to interpret it actually as that it means all of these other things other than what it means, which is usually really simple. And we know that when we reject other people, when we say no to offers, when we say no to somebody, that oftentimes it doesn't mean never. It's just not now or not yet. And it has nothing to do with, a lot of times it just has to do with it always has to do with our personal opinions and kind of our vision for things, which is not necessarily correct, which is not necessarily the right move. It's just where we're coming from.
Okay, so here's the $64,000 question. If we already know that there is a high percentage of rejection in sales, and we already know that, we don't like to be rejected, why do so many people choose the profession?
That is a great point. In fact, one of the best sales trainers I ever met, a man named Joel Weldon, who has trained hundreds and thousands of salespeople. He always says salespeople really get paid for the no's. If selling was easy, it wouldn't be a well-paid profession, but it's well-paid because of the rejection. I think for a lot of professional salespeople, I think there is a personality of salesperson. Certainly there are different kinds, but I think there's a personality that kind of likes the challenge, that likes the game, that likes the challenge of becoming and trying to be an influential person who can serve other people. So I'm not saying it's about manipulating or anything negative, but I think there's kind of a personality that gravitates towards it. And the reality, Judy, is, and you know this, I mean, we say this all the time, is that everybody in some way is selling something. They're selling a product, mm-hmm. a service, an idea, and ultimately we're always forced into having at some point to ask for something. It's at some point a question has to be asked, that you have to put yourself in that place of getting that rejection. And that's the tough part, and that's the part where everybody kind of gets hung up and stops, because they think, oh, this is a good idea, and I can do this, and I can do that. And then it's like all of a sudden, oh, but I have to ask this person for money, or I have to ask this person for help, and that's not something I want to do. And then they get stopped.
Right. Okay, so let's go to a specific industry. You work a lot with direct sales companies, and I work a lot with direct sales companies, and probably overlap, but not really. Now, what I found is that many people, and a large proportion of them, are women. They go into direct sales for many different reasons, but also one of the big ones is it's a tremendous opportunity. So many times they are brought in, and then they're left on their own. Mm-hmm. So how do you help them succeed in spite of the low rate of retention in that industry, the high rate of opportunity, but there's something missing in the middle? So how do you help them get in there and not feel rejected all the time?
Right. Well, I think it has to do with well, first of all, Richard and I believe that people need to be prepared. And so one of the things that we believe that leaders should do in these organizations is properly prepare people by warning them and explaining, hey, you're really excited about this business. And I think this could go for any business, actually. Mm-hmm. You're excited, you believe in the product and the service and everything else, but trust us when we say that not everyone will. And in fact, in some cases, especially in the direct selling industry, your family's going to think you're crazy and that, you know, the other 10 things that you've tried and failed at, this is just one of those, and so you'll just drop it and you'll go away. And that's the problem with friends and family, is they know you too well, and so they're kind of the worst place to start, I think, in many cases. So the idea is to warn people in advance and to say, you know what, there's a lot of rejection out there. Expect it, plan for it, and be prepared and think differently about it and understand that you're going to collect a certain amount of no's, especially in your first, you know, 3 to 6 months where you're learning the products and you're learning how to approach people and you're learning how to, you know, if it's a party plan model, how to throw a party and sell the products. You've got to go through a lot of that rejection as part of the process and to frame it positively so that people have this whole expectation as opposed to, hey, this is a great business, this is going to be easy, you're an idiot if you can't figure it out, if you get a no, you're obviously doing something wrong. I'd like to completely switch that and have it be the exact opposite, so they say, that's right, they told me there was going to be a certain amount of rejection and a certain amount of no's. I'm prepared, and I have to understand that intellectually. Now, how do you change somebody's negative feeling about it? Well, you have to help them go through that and say, you know what, like one of the things we do is we tell people, set a goal for getting a certain amount of no's. Have fun with it. Celebrate it when you do get those no's. Therefore, hopefully, although you may feel that sting and that, you know, pain of that personal rejection, because that doesn't go away overnight, at least you're sticking with it, because the goal is to get them from this low area of confidence and low area of competence to something higher where they can survive it easier. But we really got to get them over that, you know, 3 to 6 month hump.
Right. And, you know, and it's funny because we used to tell people it's going to take you, you know, 10 no's to this to get a yes or whatever. And we would have a lot of people that would have, you know, a really cute little chart and they'd go, okay, that was just a no. And they'd cross it off and they'd go, okay, just one more. And so they'd be excited about it. But, you know, I was looking at your website and there's one thing that you talk about, a no quotient. Can you tell us what a no quotient is?
Oh, yeah. So this is just and it goes really well with your opening monologue. It's just a fun little quiz that Richard and I developed. And what it's designed to do is ask 20 questions. It's not overly scientific, to get people a score of what their no quotient is. So when we speak, we always ask the audience, you know, we say, you know what an intelligence quotient is, right? The IQ mm-hmm. test. Well, mm-hmm. what's really important is your NQ, your no quotient. So it's, these 20 questions are phrased in really unique ways. You know, a question would be, I think that if I'm not failing, I'm doing really well. And now if the person agrees with that completely, wholeheartedly, and they rate that a 10, then what we do on their no quotient is when they get the score back, we actually say, in this case, actually, you're probably, this is what you and I talked about, you're playing it probably small, you should be failing at something, you should be getting a big no here or there. So your, actually, your belief that not failing is a good thing is causing you to have a poor no quotient. So we ask the questions in various different ways to kind of really, have people thinking differently when they get their score back in terms of failure and success and yes and no, so that they can see how, because it's kind of counterintuitive, you know, thinking differently about all of these things. So that's what that's designed for.
Well, that's pretty awesome, and I think everybody should take that. So let's go straight into my favorite topic is when people write books. And you wrote Go For No, and it sold over 300,000 copies, so woohoo to you. I mean, that is amazing. Talk to us about the book. What is the message that you share in your book? Obviously, it means go for the no, but talk to us about the book, because it's really, you know, quite encouraging for people to actually understand why they need the no.
Yeah. Well, the book is very short and simple, and it's a fable about a average copier salesman who is not doing so well, and he's got a in fact, he's got a yes goal, as we call them, to get 3 sales. And in the book, we actually have kind of a little supernatural event. He meets a future version of himself. We don't really explain how this is possible, but we just have this supernatural element. And the future version of himself is very, very successful. And they end up talking, and the current unsuccessful him says, "I don't understand. How did you get so successful?" And he says, "Well, I learned, you know, to fail. I learned to go for no. I don't let no stop me." And that's kind of the crux, you know, of the learning of the book. And we even have our main character learn the idea of no goals. So instead of just trying to go for his 3 sales that week, and he gets the 3rd sale, and then he realizes he can kind of kick back for the rest of the week, we explain that he's got to actually set a goal for the number of no's he's going to hear, as opposed to just going for those yeses, and that when you do that, that's when your sales can really explode. So, it, again, you know, it's a fun fable that hopefully people are entertained by, with the lessons and the strategies kind of embedded within it.
Well, I would say that people are loving it, because, I mean, it's really a tremendous amount of copies that you've sold already, so I think that's fantastic. So let me go one step further. You and your partner, Richard, have a business called Courage Crafters. Why Courage Crafters?
Well, real simple. We met at Lens Crafters, and that's where Lens Crafters. So when we met, our business, actually, we started doing training and sales training for the retail industry. And at the time, we called ourselves, our very first name was Accelerated Performance Training. We wanted to be very corporate sounding, and when we rebranded our business back in 2007 and incorporated, we decided to be Courage Crafters, because we were really focused. It was kind of an ode to where we met, and we really wanted to focus on the idea of using a concept and philosophy like Go for No to help people build their courage and their confidence. Because, you know, again, I think, you know, we talked about it, hearing rejection, people take it personally, they fear getting the no, and yet the irony is that when you do that, when you do hear those no's, when you do go for no, that the success is on the other side of that. And there's no way, there's no formula, there's no guarantee, there's no way that you can sit in your office and hope and pray that business comes without experiencing some kind of rejection. So our goal really is, you know, think about it differently, feel differently about it, so that you can move through that and get some of those yeses. And then when you do that, you become so much better. You know, that's where you have the opportunity to learn. Just like when we were kids, you don't learn how to ride the bike without falling off a couple times, and then you go, okay, the balance thing's really important. I learned that. I can do it now. As adults, we're the same way.
Awesome. Well, where can our listeners learn more about what you do and get a book and stay in contact with you?
I would love people to go to our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/goforno. We post daily motivation, which is what I like to call kind of it's motivation go for no style. So Facebook and at our website at goforno.com, and they can take the no quotient for free and watch videos and read the blog and do different things. So, you know, there's lots of ways to learn this concept without getting the book, but certainly, you know, I think it's a fun short read, and that's why we did it. We made it short so that people wouldn't look at it and go, oh my gosh, I'll never get through this, because we want to get the message into people's heads.
Absolutely. Okay, and my last question for you is, what do you want to leave our listeners with today?
My biggest thing is make Go for No a strategy that you do in your whole life. It's a business philosophy, but anytime you have a thought about asking for something, you know, whether it's a better table in a restaurant and you think, oh my gosh, that's such a cute table, but they're going to sit us in the very back next to the water station, I always say, go for no. The worst they can tell you is no. So ask for the table, ask for what you want, try living Go for No in every area of your life, and it's just kind of fun to see what happens.
Well, that's awesome. And didn't I say that the half hour was going to go fast? I told you that.
Yeah,
it's like the most amazing thing. Well, I just want to thank you so much for joining me, because this has been great information. It's right up our alley, and I'm just grateful that you had so much information to share with my listeners.
Oh, thanks, Judy. It was great to be with you.
Good, and I can't wait for our next encounter.
Absolutely.
Okay, and we're going to take a break to make sure we thank our sponsor, The Report for Women, which is an important resource for women in business. Check them out at www.thereportforwomen.com. You can subscribe for free and just watch the report automatically update on a regular basis. Now, if you're ready to watch your business get some great buzz, become one of our sponsors. Go to sellinginaskirtwithjudyhoberman.com, click on the sponsor tab, and watch your business soar. This is Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on Tough Talk Radio, and we will be right back.
Do you want to know the secret to building a successful business quickly? It's all about taking action, but not just any action. It takes inspired and consistent action to get profits. Join Michelle Stism, the six-figure results lady, as she asks successful entrepreneurs their profitable secrets every Monday at 2 p.m. Central Time on Take Action, Get Profits with Michelle Stism on the Tough Talk Radio Network. If you're ready to take action and get profits, you can find out more about the show at TakeActionGetProfitsRadio.com.
Listen to The Legal Eagle and The Coach each Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. on Tough Talk Radio Network. Leading local and national experts in business will share their keys to success so that our listening audience can be educated and entertained along the way to becoming all they can be. So whether you're new to business or highly experienced, The Legal Eagle and The Coach with hosts David Alterburn and Brian Kaiser is a great radio program for you. For more information, go to LegalEagleAndTheCoachRadio.com.
Are you a sales professional stuck in a rut? Are you a sales manager trying to direct women in your company? In her book, Selling in a Skirt, Judy Hoberman offers invaluable and proven insights into how gender differences can affect sales outcomes and the tools and strategies to drive real results in today's marketplace. Judy offers a suite of workshops, seminars, and coaching programs that complement her highly successful book. Her 30 years in sales have given her both the knowledge and a sense of humor about the gender differences that we should all understand and embrace instead of feeling unable to communicate. Judy's humorous stories about how men and women sell, manage, recruit, and supervise differently will enlighten you in learning how both genders can support each other's successes in a more productive way. Find out more by going to sellinginaskirt.com.
Welcome back to Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on Tough Talk Radio. Now, this is the time when I talk to you about social media. The best way to gain access and to connect with us is on social media. So like us on Facebook at Selling in a Skirt and Tough Talk Radio. You can be my friend on Facebook at Judy Hoberman. And, of course, follow me on Twitter at Selling in a Skirt. And, of course, you can use hashtag Selling in a Skirt and Skirt Wisdom. This is the easiest way to find out what's going on with all our wonderful shows on Tough Talk Radio. Bring in my next amazing guest, Dr. Rebecca Good. Dr. Good has spent 28 years as an educator in both ISDs and a charter district. Her last 5 years in Dallas, the Dallas ISD, she supervised the operational and instructional systems in the very lowest performing middle schools and high school. In 2010, she began to work on the educational vision of the Legacy Preparatory Charter Academy application. It was approved in September of 2011, and the doors of three K through 7th grade Legacy campuses opened in August of 2012 as the largest charter opening in Texas history up to that point. Dr. Good has presented thousands of times on a variety of educational topics. She's been an adjunct professor for Concordia University of Texas since 2007 to teachers who want to get their master's in curriculum, literacy, or educational administration in a face-to-face setting. She has also created and teaches online master-level courses for the American College of Education since 2009 to teachers who want to get their master's and or ESL endorsement. She's been published several times in educational journals, and her second book came out in March of 2014 on helping assistant principals become stronger instructional leaders before reaching their principalship. So welcome to the show, Dr. Good. I am looking forward to the second half of the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I know how busy you are, and I am so grateful to have you here. So let's just jump right in. You know, we're talking today about learning how to fail. And being an educator, do you believe that it's okay to fail?
It's mandatory to fail. As a matter of fact, we have a couple. We have signs up around the buildings that say "Fail forward." Fail is first attempt in learning, and so certainly we praise kids when we see that they have learned from their mistakes. And as a matter of fact, Carol Dweck is very famous now for her work on fixed mindset versus growth mindset, and that's one of the things that we have to work with parents on. This thing about praising so much that we actually shut kids down has become a real problem in society these days. And we all know that getting a prize for the whole team, even when we lose, is starting to show negative consequences in kids. We now have research that shows that our kids are losing their risk-taking motivation by middle school because they are afraid of not looking smart. So that is huge in my world anyway. I train teachers on it, I train parents on it, and I have to work with kids on it, that we want them to show effort and growth versus a high grade.
Okay, so I mean, I agree with you. I think that you have to fail in order to succeed, and you have to have the lessons learned. But failure has such a negative connotation. So how do you flip that around in the minds of kids that you are molding every single day?
Well, one of the things that we do is we have tools in place to help them with that. For example, yes, we have to give them tests. We have to know where they are in their learning every, let's say, 3 weeks. Well, they take the common assessment, and once the data are generated around that assessment, what we do is we ask the kids to analyze their data. They have something called a mile marker, and they take their what they did, their item analysis, from their common assessment, and then they have to reflect on it. How did I do? What did I do well in? What did I not do well in? What goal am I going to set for myself for my next common assessment? And what behaviors do I need to change such that I will actually have a chance at meeting my goals? And so we have them do this after each common assessment so that they can, over time, see growth. And so let's say that we have a child who has tremendous academic gaps, and their common assessment comes in at a 43. Well, we are going to set a goal of reaching 50 or 52, and then we're going to work hard to make sure that they have those behavior changes that cause them to have a chance at meeting their goals, and then we look at their next common assessment results, and we go through that process again. And if they reach anywhere near that 50, 52, then we celebrate, and we say, oh, my gosh. And so they'll at first they will go, oh, but I still failed it. It's like we're not looking at that. We're looking at growth. If we look at growth and we say, what is our next goal going to be now that you've reached the 50? Let's say your next goal is going to be 58 to 60. And you see how over a year's time, by growing kids that way, they actually see before their very eyes that the changes that they put in themselves, i.e. coming to school every day, paying attention in class, doing your homework, those little things actually pays off in a real way. And so that's how we do it here.
So you're encouraging them to fail productively.
Oh, as long as they show growth, then we're on the right path to success.
Absolutely. Okay, so we are talking about, you know, you're a superintendent of three charter schools in Texas. And for the listeners that don't understand the difference between a regular public school and a charter school, can you just give us like an overview?
Sure. We are a public school. We're paid the same way as an ISD, i.e. every time a child comes to school before 10 o'clock in the morning and stays the rest of the day, then we get paid for that child being here with taxpayer money, just like an ISD. Now, we get a little bit less money. We get about 80% of what an ISD gets, and out of that 80%, we must pay rent. ISDs don't have to pay rent, but we do, and so anywhere between 15 and 18% of that money that we receive from the state goes towards facilities. Now, we do have to follow the state standards. There are several myths out there about charters. We are not allowed to do whatever we want. Matter of fact, we have more oversight than an ISD. We must teach the TEKS, which are the state standards. We must take the state test, just like an ISD. If we don't get acceptable on the state test for 3 years, then they could shut us down. I mean, this is a tough world that we live in. And so really are a public school, except for the fact that we don't always have to take every student. Now, we're an open enrollment, so in theory we do. Of course, we have special ed, we have speech therapy and so forth. But if there's a child that has had a tough past, has been in alternative schools and so forth several times, then those children we don't have to take because we don't have an alternative setting like an ISD has for kids like that.
Right.
But otherwise, we have autistic, we have dyslexia, we have speech therapy. I mean, we're an ISD. I mean, sorry, we're a public school like an ISD, and so we must offer those services.
Okay, so you're like a regular ISD, probably have a little bit stricter guidelines and everything because of who you are, but you also, you know, it was mentioned that you have the low performing students. So is there a percentage of advancement or a certain growth that you're looking for in these kids?
Well, of course, we want them to be able to be successful on the state test. It's a rigorous test, and so passing mm-hmm. that is a good marker of our success. What I will say is that we need the full 5 years that our charter gives us to be able to meet some of the academic gaps that especially some of our kids in Mesquite and Dallas have brought us.
Mm-hmm.
Those were understandably our fastest filling locations, and so we've had quite a bit of work to do, and let me show you some proof of that. We have a state test in science that is given in fifth grade, and so our fifth graders the first year took that test and frankly did not do very well on it. Our teachers discovered by mid-year of that first year that most of these kids had never been taught science in their ISD schools, even though it's a cumulative science test, i.e., the standards that it covers come from the kinder through fifth grade science curriculum, and so we did not score very well. The second year, with those fourth graders who came the first year and that now the second year became fifth graders, they had phenomenal gains. In Mesquite, they gained 24 points. In Richardson, they gained 40 points. And so what they showed us is if you teach it, they will learn it. So those are the type of gaps that we've had to overcome, and we're doing it pretty well. The problem with a growing charter like ours, we started with 800 students. We're now up to almost 1,300, and so we're bringing in new kids every year. We brought in almost 300 new ones this year with no test data, no data to tell us where they were. And so we've had to take a little bit of time to get to know what are their instructional gaps and how will we meet them. And so I feel that we're still in that going backwards before we go forwards time frame of a developing charter. So we have our challenges ahead, and luckily we have a very good staff and teachers who are very serious about meeting those gaps, and we have very strong professional development that helps our teachers with that. So going forward, like I ask the students, the only thing I ask my teachers is that they continue to show growth in their common assessments so that we know that we're meeting the needs of kids.
Awesome. Okay. So let me ask you a question. There's something on your website. It says that you talk about education done right. What does that
That's
mean?
Right.
How important is it actually to get that done?
Well, and like I tell teachers, education done right is hard. And why is that? Well, because there's no script for getting it done right because every child comes in slightly different. And
mm-hmm.
so what we have to do is we have to take the state standards and we have to put them and put them in our case, a project that is relevant and engaging and that meets the needs of the varied learners in our classroom. And so what we're asking a teacher to do is to plan with the other teachers a very interesting, relevant project that has to do with real-world applications and while using the state standards, while differentiating the instruction to the not only special ed students in the room, but the struggling learners and then the gifted learners. They have to do all that in the space of about 50 minutes every day. That's a lot to ask. So, and especially if they come with gaps that are 2 or 3 years behind. So it requires extra planning. It requires a lot of extra time involved so that they can get it right. And that done day in and day out can wear one down unless one is super motivated and has a lot of support from the administrative team on a campus. And so we try to make sure that we are very supportive of our teachers so that they continue to feel motivated to work harder than they've ever worked before in their lives, because that's what it takes to work with today's students. They are our students today are not like the students from when you and I were in school. They feel a little bit more empowered. Mm-hmm. They sort of demand to be respected in a different way, almost like a peer-like way. We're really having to train our children to be children. I know that sounds odd, but many of them come in used to interacting with adults as peers, and so we, in anticipation of preparing them for college and career, we have to help them go backwards a little bit before they go forwards. And the way we do that, matter of fact, is we have a curriculum that is not only based on the state standards, but is also graded through the career skills. They get grades on collaboration, communication, work ethic, cognitive development, agency, and oral and written presentation skills. So we make sure that our young people start preparing themselves for their chosen careers at a very young age.
I do remember, you know, when my kids were growing up, that people would say to me, "Oh, I'm going to be friends with my kids," and I kept saying, "You know, you're a parent, you're not a friend." Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, part of it is it starts from home anyway. But I have a question for you. You have to be like a tremendous role model for the young female students in your charter school, because you're one of the only of the 17% of female superintendents in Texas. And so, I mean, they probably look at you and are probably in awe, because you have this great role. No, seriously, you have a great role. You are female. You have a lot of, and I don't want to say power, but you know what I mean, the position
yes.
that you hold.
Yes.
So
yes.
So what do they aspire to be you? Are they asking, like, how do I get to that level or get that education?
You know, it depends on the school. We have our young ladies in Dallas where the kids are 80% low socioeconomic. What that means is 80% qualify for free or reduced lunch. And Mesquite has about 77%. So we're talking about young people who we're having to build them up first before they even mm-hmm. recognize what I bring. We have sponsors in Dallas, for example, who have a girls club after school. And I have gone and I've talked to them about that very thing, about walking with your head up and not letting boys be sort of the thing that keeps you from being successful. And we also bring the AIMS program, AIMS for Success program, which is a program that helps them understand that if they set a goal for themselves now, that they won't let anything interfere. They won't let drugs, alcohol, sex be something that keeps them from their goals. But we have a lot of work to do with some of our young ladies, constantly having to bring empowerment strategies to them such that they feel comfortable in their own skin first, while sort of training them to recognize how women can be successful like me. So it's a multi-tiered thing that we're having to do, especially with our young people from the lowest socioeconomic areas in the Dallas area.
Yeah, it's. And I know it's hard, but I know it's also very rewarding. I was a teacher in the inner city in New York, and I remember how challenging it was. But if you could reach, you know, one, two kids or whatever, mm-hmm. it was like the whole world had changed.
Yes.
So I thought, yeah, that's always amazing. Okay, so I am the biggest snoop. I always go on everybody's website. I always try to find some interesting things. And there's so many things I could talk about. But one of the things that was really that perked up my interest was about the STEM magazine that you have. And obviously, a lot of people, when I was growing up, I mean, girls did not go into anything that was other than teaching or maybe a nurse. But so talk to me about, you know, why the STEM magazine is important on your website.
We are a STEM academy. which means that we're STEM designated, science, technology, engineering, and math. We got that designation from TEA this past summer. And what that means is that we are committed to bringing especially the strong sciences and math to our young people with a special emphasis on girls. And so we have in our K-5, our kinder through fifth grade, we have engineering is elementary, and our curriculum is engineering based. So our teachers bring a different type of engineering projects to our young people. For example, they do different type of bridges, and they figure out what they have to do different to the bridges so that they can hold more pennies. They will make, and I wish I could remember the name, but the first grade last week made wind measurement instruments. And so we do this so that it gets them excited about engineering and about the sciences, and it takes the scare factor out, because in the old days somehow our young ladies got to middle school afraid of the math and sciences. You know, there's some research now that shows that teachers tended to ask questions only or more of boys in those classes than of girls, and that the girls felt a little bit put down if they showed an interest in those areas. Now we're completely opposite and really encourage girls to do summer science camps and so forth. Matter of fact, we also do programming. We're partners with UTD, and we have programming that goes on at each of the campuses, and that starts in kindergarten. It starts K-9, and then we have robotics in one or two of them also of the locations. So we have a very, very intense approach to these IT, but science-related fields. And I don't know if you're starting to read like research like I am, but they're now saying that programming or coding is the next sort of literacy piece that we need to introduce to our young people along with reading. And so
Absolutely.
Coding will become part of the early childhood grade curriculum.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, when my kids were growing up, I remember distinctly computers were first coming out, and one of the teachers told me that my kids would never have to learn how to spell because it'll always be spell check available to them. And I thought, yeah. Okay, so now we're talking about coding. You know, it's like another language. It's very interesting to me, very interesting. So one of the other things that I saw was that there was a commercial on, and I can't remember what it was for, but it's exactly what we're talking about for STEM. It was about a little girl on the beach, and her mom said, don't go over there, you'll get dirty. And then she was trying to do a science project with her brother, and the dad said, let your brother do it. And it kept going on and on until there was a science fair that she was looking at, but instead of her really being interested, she was putting on lip gloss because that's what she was programmed for. And so I think that a lot of the companies out there and a lot of, you know, the schools are really trying to push young girls, young women into STEM, which to me I think is fantastic. Love it.
Well, and now with our new high school endorsements, you know, House Bill 5 changed graduation requirements, and we must now in high school offer certain type of endorsements. Our endorsements that we offer here is information technology and health sciences, because having done a future job trend, we know now that most of the jobs will be either in the medical fields in some way or the other, or with computers. And so our young people, and we're half boys, half girl here, we'll take one or the other. And so we know that we're going to be graduating kids who are have more math and science than most ISD high schools.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what's next for you?
Well, I need to, I have two buildings. I have a $12 million building that we just got approved of last week that we will be opening in Mesquite. And then Plano's phase two will happen to continue growing and adding more kids. So that's what we're about, bringing more of this heavy science and math to young people in the Dallas area.
Well, we'll be pushing out all of your info on all social media. So how can our listeners connect with you? Absolutely.
Well, if they want to go to legacypca.com, they can find us there, our Facebook page. I'm very proud of. We have fascinating articles that transcend parenting, sciences, funnies. You know, I just there was a funny that we ended the week last week with a math funny that it says, Mr. Algebra, get over your ex. She's not coming back. We don't know why either. Get it? So you know, we want to be interesting. We want to be fun, and yet we want to have a heavy emphasis on the math and sciences and get to be known for that.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much, by the way.
Yes, and thank you. I really enjoyed sharing the mic with you today, and I'm looking forward to continuing our conversation and seeing if there's anything we can help you with.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you again.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'm going to wrap up the show with a few ideas that you need to know in order for you to learn how to fail. This is Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on Tough Talk Radio, and we will be right back.
Join Dr. Alan Simberg and his guests every Tuesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Central Standard Time on Life Changing Insights. Life Changing Insights is a show dedicated to providing its listeners with self-improvement information that has a positive effect on an individual's mental, physical, and spiritual being, as well as unresolved relationship issues. For more information or to be a guest on Life Changing Insights, go to LifeChangingInsightsWithDrAlanSimberg.com. Life Changing Insights, every Tuesday from 3 to 4 p.m. Central Standard Time, right here on the Tough Talk Radio Network.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location? Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio medium, where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Join Judy Hoberman on her radio show, Selling in a Skirt, Mondays at noon Central, for exciting discussions about challenges for women in today's society. The talk is about women in business, work and life balance, leadership, and current events related to gender communication. Be prepared to be inspired, motivated, and challenged. Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on the Tough Talk Radio Network is your connection to women nationally, internationally, and globally. So get comfy and see what the buzz is all about. Listen live on Mondays at noon by going to SellingInASkirtWithJudyHoberman.com.
Welcome back to Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on Tough Talk Radio. So here's a few thoughts on learning how to win by learning how to fail. Failure is part of being human. Everybody fails at something, and those that achieve a great deal fail at many things. But it's how you choose to look at your failures. You can choose to look at it being defeated or as a setback, and then you're seeing your failure through negative eyes. Or you can choose to regard failures as opportunities to learn what not to do or what needs to change, and then you're in the positive mode. I personally choose the latter, and in fact, my book, Famous Isn't Enough, is all about the failures I encountered and the lessons learned. Failure can accelerate our success, and here's some tips. Number one, when you fail to accomplish something, you are not the failure. You are the person. You did not fail as a person. Your attempt at doing something was what failed. You have to learn to separate the two. Look for the lessons from the failures, because you know those lessons will lead you to your future wins. Second, take a step back and evaluate your actions. Look at everything you've done and see where the gap is that would have led you to the success. Remember, when you ask people for their opinions of what went wrong, they will usually lead you to what will be right. And third, ask for advice, not just from anyone, someone that could guide you on the right path, a coach or a mentor, or even someone in the same field. To learn from our mistakes, we need to be able to receive the criticism without taking it personally, and then using that information to improve so the next time you're not repeating the same mistakes. You know, I found some advice along the way that I want to share. It's called learning by failure. Failing is not bad. It's an opportunity for personal growth and learning. Learning cannot begin until you fail. Learning cannot begin until you learn to fail. Failing first teaches you what you don't know and then helps you learn. Anything that has been done was once considered impossible because of failing. I thank you all for tuning in every Monday at noon Central, where we share some extraordinary guests, ideas for your business, and ways to stand out as the amazing women that you are. Make sure you stay connected with us, and remember, women want to be treated equally, not identically. Until next week, this is Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on Tough Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. A special thanks to all of our sponsors. If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest, please visit toughtalkradionetwork.com.